This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And we're already seeing concerns emerging about the shrinking of civic space and reports of political interference in the National Human Rights Institution in the lead-up to the election.
That was UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasina on the closing of its office, Uganda's office in Uganda. Details coming up. Also, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken called out Russia for the effect its invasion of Ukraine is having on global hunger. And a team from ECOWAS left Niger without meeting the leader of the new military junta. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the UN Human Rights Office said today it has been forced to close its office in Uganda and would officially cease operations in the country tomorrow. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani tells VOA the government informed her office in February of the decision not to renew the host country agreement that allows the agency to work in the country.
In their view, Uganda was at a stage in its ability to manage the human rights situation where the UN Human Rights Office was no longer needed. We, of course, deeply regret this decision. We've been in the country for 18 years. We've threatened and we've tried to serve as a bridge between the government and civil society.
Shamdasani acknowledges Uganda has made progress on several human rights issues. For example, she notes that Uganda is the second country in Africa to adopt a national action plan on business and human rights. However, she adds many challenges and problems remain. She says human rights officials are particularly concerned about the situation ahead of the 2026 elections.
And we're already seeing concerns emerging about the shrinking of civic space and reports of political interference in the National Human Rights Institution in the lead up to the elections. We are worried. We're worried that there's an increasingly hostile environment for civil society actors, journalists, human rights defenders.
She warns the prevailing bellicose climate in Uganda is not conducive to free and fair elections. Shamdasani says the recent passage of Uganda's anti-homosexuality bill, which makes homosexual acts punishable by death, is of great concern.
It's deeply discriminatory, and it's had already a corrosive effect on all of society. It's encouraging people to almost carry out witch hunts of lesbians and gays in Uganda. I mean, this is an example of a law which is in clear violation of Uganda's international human rights commitments.
Shamdasani says the UN Human Rights Office remains committed to working on human rights in Uganda. While UN officials no longer will be on the ground, she says they will continue to monitor the situation, but from a distance. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken called out Russia at a meeting of the UN Security Council for the effect its invasion of Ukraine is having on global hunger. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Russia has been targeting ports and storage facilities vital for shipping grain from Ukraine. The strikes come after Moscow pulled out of the Black Sea Grain Initiative last month, an agreement that allowed Kyiv to export grain to global markets during the Russian invasion. On Thursday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken chaired a meeting at the United Nations Security Council focused on food insecurity and called out Moscow as Ukrainian trucks can no longer load their grains onto ships.
Every member of this council, every member of the United Nations should tell Moscow, enough. Enough using the Black Sea as blackmail. Enough treating the world's most vulnerable people as leverage. Enough of this unjustified, unconscionable war.
International Rescue Committee President David Miliband told the council there is consensus that conflict is the primary driver of food insecurity today, worsened by the climate crisis.
We also know the countries. Every single assessment has the same list. Somalia, Afghanistan, Yemen, Nigeria, South Sudan, Sudan, Burkina Faso, Mali, Haiti. The analysis is not in dispute, but analysis is too often followed by paralysis.
Blinken noted that 5 years ago, the UN Security Council adopted a resolution saying that the intentional starvation of civilians may constitute a war crime.
Nearly 90 countries, including the United States, have already signed a new joint communique that we drafted and circulated, committing to end the use of famine, starvation, and food as weapons of war. Hunger must not be weaponized. I urge all member states to join this communique.
Russian President Vladimir Putin hosted leaders of African countries late last month for a summit as the continent braced for the consequences of Moscow's withdrawal from the Ukraine grain export deal. Moscow tried to reassure its African partners, saying it understood their concern and was ready to export grain for free to African countries that need it. At the United Nations, relief experts discussed the global food supply, saying it is not a question of there not being enough food to feed everyone. It is a question of people in many countries not having enough food to survive because it is being blocked by unnecessary conflict. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Japan's foreign minister, following a one-on-one meeting Thursday with Ethiopia's deputy prime minister, expressed hope their two nations will work together on the resumption of the Black Sea Grain Initiative. Maya Masakir reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Japanese Foreign Minister Yoshimasa Hayashi, making his first visit to Ethiopia on Thursday, expressed hope that the two countries can work together for a resumption of the Black Sea Grain Initiative. The foreign minister said he shared concerns about the impact of Russia's aggression against Ukraine on food security in Africa following a one-on-one meeting with Ethiopian Deputy Prime Minister Demeke Mekonnen.
Japan deplores the termination of the Black Sea Grain Initiative by Russia, and Japan hopes to work together with Ethiopia towards the resumption of the initiative.
Since the start of the Black Sea Grain Deal, which took effect in July 2022, the United Nations has overseen the export of more than 262 metric tons of wheat to Ethiopia. Climate shocks that brought about severe droughts and conflict in Ethiopia have put over 20 million people in need of food assistance. Hayashi also talked about the Japanese government's support of the peace deal that brought an end to the war in Ethiopia's Tigray region.
I mentioned Japan's support for the implementation of the peace agreement signed between the Ethiopian government and the TPLF, and stated Japan would give serious consideration to further cooperation towards the implementation of this agreement.
Demeke, who also serves as Ethiopia's foreign minister, said the two had a productive discussion on issues of mutual interest.
In our talks, we pledged to deepen our partnership in the political, economic, and social sectors. In particular, we renewed our commitment to strengthening our investment, trade, and development cooperation.
The Japanese foreign minister's visit to Southwest Asia and Africa concluded Thursday in Ethiopia after earlier stops in South Africa and Uganda. Maya Misikir for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Despite a reputation of political neutrality and professionalism, the Tunisian army followed President Kais Saied's orders to close parliament and sack the government 2 years ago. A new book based on interviews with retired officers reveals how and why the army played a crucial role in the president's power grab. Reporter Noura Hafaid, as narrated by VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi, examines the findings from Tunis.
The Tunisian revolution erupted in 2011 with a campaign of civil resistance and street demonstrations that led to the ousting of longtime President Zine El Abidine Ben Ali. During the uprising, the Tunisian army chose not to fire on protesters. It then defended the transition to democracy by ignoring calls for a military coup in 2013. However, in his new book, Soldiers of Democracy, Brookings Center for Middle East Policy fellow Sharan Griwal says the army played a crucial role in Tunisian President Kais Saied's moves to take
We have technical difficulties. We shall resume. We'll have the report as soon as it's possible. A team of the West Africa Regional Bloc, ECOWAS, left Niger without meeting the leader of the junta, which seized power in a coup. General Abdourahamane Tiani, or deposed President Mohamed Bazoum. For further clarification on the ongoing matter in Niger, I talked to VOA French to Africa Chief Timothy Donangmai.
In fact, according to some sources in Niamey, they didn't even leave the premises of the Niamey airport. Apparently, the new leader said they wanted to protect them from people who support the coup, which is a very specious explanation. So they were not able to meet the coup leaders or to discuss the situation there.
So this thing is falling apart here. You know, ECOWAS, a regional body comprised of 15 West African countries, they couldn't get through to these coup leaders. The African Union, the United Nations have also issued statements condemning the apparent coup. What do you think is going to happen now?
It is hard to tell, and the latest news is that the junta in Niamey revoked military and security cooperation agreements with France, which has about 1,500 soldiers in Niger fighting terror groups there. And the French government said that it's not up to the Putschist regime to revoke those agreements, but only a legitimate government can do that. So much uncertainty on the situation in Niger now, and it's hard to tell how this is going to end.
And Timothy, Guinea, Burkina Faso, Mali especially, which shares borders with Niger, they all have released a joint statement denouncing the ECOWAS sanctions as illegal, illegitimate, and inhumane, and refusing to apply them. And they also said any military intervention against Niger will be considered as a declaration of war against Burkina Faso and Mali. So where did this united front come from? Is this disdain they have, all of them, for France?
Yeah, this unexpected element is complicating the equation now in Niger. And I think all of those countries that you named, all of the regimes there, military regimes, they went through ECOWAS sanctions, UN, AU statements against coups. So they were kind of isolated, and now they have company. There are now four countries that are led by Putschist juntas. So, you know, they decided to band together and to form a front against ECOWAS, against France. And as we discussed yesterday, anytime you're against France in Francophone Africa, people applaud you. At least the street applauds you.
And Timothy, lastly, let me ask you, these coup d'etats overthrowing a person like Bazoum in Burkina Faso, in Mali. So now, should we like conclude that these coup d'etats are not actually to overthrow the leader of that country, but to actually overthrow France?
Yes, I think at the bottom of all this, there are the internal issues. The coup leaders try to peg it on France. You know, it's a convenient explanation for their action. But in the case of Niger, it was said that President Bazoum was in the process of firing the head of his presidential guard. And so that guy, he would have lost his job. And so the only way to keep his job was to go through a coup.
That was VOA French to Africa Chief Timothy Donangmai. And now we go back to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy's report on Tunisia and its military.
The Tunisian revolution erupted in 2011 with a campaign of civil resistance and street demonstrations that led to the ousting of longtime President Zine El Abidine Ben Ali. During the uprising, the Tunisian army chose not to fire on protesters. It then defended the transition to democracy by ignoring calls for a military coup in 2013. However, in his new book, Soldiers of Democracy, Brookings Center for Middle East Policy fellow Sharan Griwal says the army played a crucial role in Tunisian President Kais Saied's moves to take full control of the government. He says the army facilitated Saied's moves to close the parliament, try dissidents in military courts, and expel sub-Saharan African migrants into the desert near the border. During a recent Brookings Institute webinar, Griwal explained why the military followed Saied's orders.
The culture of being subordinate to the president led them to defer to his interpretation that this was legal and constitutional. And the desire to stay far from politics led them to think that obeying these orders would be less political than openly refusing the order.
The author says that professionalism means obeying all orders except if they are illegal or unconstitutional. He says two other factors shaped the army's behavior.
Many of the military officers had come to embrace Kais Saied's populism and this desire to clean up the political system. And you've seen the top generals also have personal interests in sticking with Kais Saied. He has promoted these top generals ahead of schedule, promoted them to higher ranks, securing their support.
Gruel says Saied also secured army support by appointing two military doctors as ministers of health and appointed a general as a minister of agriculture. VOA requested a response from the defense ministry but received no reply. A retired army officer agreed to comment on condition that his name would not be revealed. He said that all should remember that on July 25th, 2021, Tunisians took to the streets calling for the resignation of the government as the country was in turmoil, the economy was nosediving, and politicians came to blows in the parliament. He said Saied responded that night by dismissing his cabinet and suspending the parliament for 30 days, which the constitution allows. Ayaz Rad, a research fellow at NATO Defense College, found through her research that there is no cohesive position in the Tunisian army about what happened in July 2021, which some Tunisians call a presidential coup.
There are the ones who are loyalist, who are partisan of Kais Saied, but there are also those who are very professional and those who for whom the reputation of the military is of the most important.
She says because of the army's desire to maintain its good reputation, the military justice has decided to avoid political tensions and is now reluctant to prosecute Tunisian civilians. Gruel says, because the Tunisian army is concerned about its reputation domestically and internationally, United States pressure could shape the army's decision whether to support domestic moves to restore a democratic transition. For Noura Fayed in Tunis, I am Mohamed El-Shenawy.
Ethiopia's federal government today declared a state of emergency as violent clashes escalate between the National Army and local fighters from the northern region of Amhara. The French news agency AFP says the statement did not make clear if the state of emergency applied nationwide or just to the Amhara region, which lies to the north of the capital Addis Ababa. The government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed did not reply immediately to questions from the AFP. Clashes in the Amhara region between the National Army and local fighters have escalated in recent weeks, prompting travel warnings from foreign governments and the cancellation of flights by the national carrier Ethiopian Airlines. Tensions have been rising since April, when the federal government announced it was dismantling regional forces, including in the Amhara region, where nationalists felt the move would weaken Ethiopia's second most populous region. For our 60th anniversary, we also asked for comments from you on our service, and dozens of people have shared their thoughts about our programs. Here are several of them.
Happy 60 years anniversary to VOA Africa. Congratulations. My name is Bob William from Benin City, Nigeria. I've been listening to Daybreak Africa since 1980.
Call me Daniel Dugby, live from Ramoji of Lake State. I would like to take this golden opportunity to thank BOA for introducing BOA English to Africa service. My favorite program is BOA South Sudan in Focus because it's reliable, informative, and gives accurate information on issues happening in South Sudan and Africa at large.
I'm Peter Amanasun from Benin in Nigeria. I love all your programs, especially Music Time in Africa. I used to play nearly the whole African music. But keep it on, especially the old school of the Congo music of 90s, 60s, and beyond or above. Thank you very much. I wish you success. More celebration ahead.
Voice of America African Services. This is Emil from Freetown, Sierra Leone. Sending this voice note as you said you are celebrating your 60 years on August 4th. My own contribution to the African service of Voice of America, especially the Daybreak Africa. People like James Botti and also Peter Clotte, who also organizes that weekend program. I'm a fervent listener from Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much for all your good work. I want to thank the management and staff of Voice of America for the good works that you are doing. Continue to keep up in the good works. We'll be staying out there listening to your favorite programs and also looking forward to some good programs that will be coming up in future.
I'm your good listener, James Roy Majok from Bantu Town, South Sudan. I'm really glad to share this happiness on the 16th anniversary celebration for BO News Africa. I've listened to BO News from 1996 to 2023. It's almost like 27 years. Thanks.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Zainab Abdul Rahman, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station,